So in this episode, we are going to turn the tables. It's going to be basically me looking in the mirror because I'm joined by Archie Mills, who was one of the attendees at a recent workshop that I was part of. And we followed up in a conversation sort of through email. We had a little bit of a short conversation and explored an idea, which Archie's going to explain, which is actually putting me on the spot. So rather than me doing the interview, which is normally the case in these episodes, I'm going to be the interviewee. So without further ado, handing over to you then, Archie, lead away.
Yeah, thank you so much, Neil. That webinar with Cambridge Marketing College was really interesting, certainly talking about communications and climate and sustainability. One thing that I really left the day with was that it's really apparent that there's so much going on in this space with vast amounts of things for brands to consider when it comes to communicating with consumers around sustainability, and using marketing obviously is that tool. So I really wanted to speak with you and listen to your experience on some questions that I kind of noted down on the day. My experience, I've worked in marketing for about 15 years, predominantly for drinks brands, sort of 7 years with a global brewer, and more recently with a smaller whiskey brand. So I think some of the questions at the start will be quite broad, and then I've got a couple of questions particularly about sort of different industries, which will hopefully come apparent in a minute. So
great stuff. So this is exciting for me because, as I say, normally it's me doing the questioning, and I sit back and I ponder and I reflect, and then I kind of bounce back various ideas. So yeah, being put on the spot, this is kind of interesting. We'll see. Okay. It's a Q&A.
I hope I don't put you on the spot too much, but the first sort of general and probably broadest question is, what impact have you seen or do you see sustainability marketing having on consumer behaviour and probably purchase intention and purchasing decisions?
It's an interesting question. And I think what I'm seeing is that actually the driver for once isn't from a marketing perspective. I think a lot of the times as marketers, we try and, you know, kind of shape the environment. We try and lead by example. We try and, you know, create value that we then hope our target audiences want. I think for once, and this is quite an interesting reflection, is that I think the market is driving us. I think there is in certain demographics, in certain age bands, in certain, you know, sectors, I think there is a very clear sort of emerging evidence that's coming through that there's a real thirst, a real appetite by some target customer groups for, you know, really putting us as marketers and as brands on the spot and saying, look, guys, if you don't really show us your credentials, if you aren't open and authentic and honest and true, we're not going to buy from you. And it kind of then sort of reflects back on us as marketers to have to say, well, okay, right, now we've got to get serious about this. It isn't just one of those things that is coming in the future. We're actually hearing it now that our customers are kind of using this whole sustainability word in its broadest sense to make decisions about whether they're going to stay with us or whether they're even going to consider us and our products and services. And of course, particularly in commoditized markets where, you know, there's very little difference really between one brand and another, this is really, really going to be complicated, I think, for those who are, you know, not willing to jump in and say, okay, we're going to, you know, bring sustainability into our messaging, into our day-to-day practices, because if you try and avoid it, could be very, very sticky ground to be playing on in the future. So I think it's an interesting question because I think the impetus is coming from the marketplace, which is great because it's going to sort the wheat from the chaff in marketing. It really is. It's going to, if you're not a seriously, you know, conscious marketer, you're going to struggle, I think.
Yes. Yeah. It's really interesting. And it's funny because it kind of leads naturally into my next question, which was, I've read quite a lot of literature recently about, obviously, there seems to be obviously rising consumer demand for sustainability or eco-friendly brands. And then the ultimate commitment of, you know, buying a product and potentially having a willingness to pay more for a sustainable product. But do you think the current cost of living crisis will push sustainability down the agenda for consumers and potentially for marketing practitioners too? And then as a second point on that, how could marketing communications keep sustainability, you know, relevant in times of tough choices for consumers?
I love this question. It's such a hard question. It really is. And I think anybody who would think, oh, yes, I've got the simple, you know, one line answer to that really doesn't understand the question. This is super complex. You know, I've been in marketing for decades now. And I think some of these challenges, you know, we've never seen as marketers, you know, challenges like this. I think, you know, to answer the first part of the question, I think the inevitability of the current, particularly here in the UK, the current economic challenges, if you like, of, you know, fuel prices, energy, you know, just keeping head above water for most people. I don't think it affects every demographic. I think, you know, there will be, you know, certain levels of affluence that aren't necessarily going to be particularly affected by the fact that there's lots of, you know, challenges on the rest of us. It's an interesting little example locally here. We were sort of coming home the other evening in the car, and we were just noticing actually how few houses have Christmas decorations up. But the ones that do are going great guns. They clearly are out to impress. Or is it impress? Is it to kind of gloat on the fact we can afford electricity? Because, you know, it's even at that sort of level, I think people are being really conscious about how they're spending. And I think there will be this inevitable, and I think it is absolutely inevitable, pressure on, you know, sustainable purchasing. Because if you literally cannot afford at one level to, you know, have choice in the product that you're buying because you simply can only afford to purchase the cheapest, then the whole kind of sustainable kind of element of that equation, where, you know, you might have chosen brand A, which is more expensive but ethical and sustainable, over brand B, which was cheaper, that probably goes out the window for a while. I think it'll come back. But I think in the short term, there is just this practicality for most people that, you know, they are having to count their pennies. And that is just the simple practicality over it. I don't think, though, to kind of come on to the second part of the question, I don't think, though, that is any excuse for marketers to put this off. I think there will still be, you know, customers out there who will say, no, I'm going to really hold true. And even if it means I can't switch the heating on, I am going to purchase ethically. I'm going to purchase sustainable products. Because to me, that as a consumer, that is more important than, you know, other things. And so even if I might then, you know, choose to prioritize, you know, certain elements in my kind of weekly shop or whatever, I'm going to prioritize ethics and sustainability above everything else. I still think there will be people who are doing that. And I think it probably depends where you are. In certain areas of the country, I think we're certainly seeing, you know, live very close to Bristol, down in the southwest, and here there is a real kind of pressure. I think it's a very much a green kind of eco city, and there is a big pressure on purchasing ethically and purchasing sustainable products, and it's almost like you're frowned upon if you don't, whereas in other parts of the country you can probably get away with it because it isn't really necessarily the flavor of the day. But I do think that the level of affluence of the customers who, if you're a marketer, that you're targeting, will have a profound effect on, you know, how sustainable they're able to be. And I think if it doesn't really matter because they've got the money to spend, then I don't think they're going to be too bothered, and they will continue to do it. But I think if, you know, if it literally is you're really counting the pennies, then I think for now, in the short term, and that probably is through to the spring, maybe early summer of next year, I think we're going to see that this will be a big impact. But it doesn't mean that as marketers, you can take your eye off the ball, because if you make the wrong call and you make that assumption that, oh, it doesn't matter, we can put it off for now, and your competitor does and they go for it, and they get a strategic gain on you because they're just doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do, you could be missing a trick and you could lose business from it. So I still think it's now is the time to be really focusing on it, even if you don't see the commercial gain for the foreseeable future. That might be the difference here.
Yeah, that's really interesting, sort of staying true and consistent to your sort of green messaging. Because I listened to your podcast from last week with Jake Backus, which is very, very interesting and really worth the listen. One thing I noted down there was Jake mentioned the opportunities for brands to get ahead of consumers and surprise and delight with sustainability messaging and initiatives that the brand's undertaking, as opposed to just sort of directly answering consumer demand in a sort of conceited way. So as an extension of a previous question then, like how can you see brands getting ahead of consumers to surprise and delight with sustainability marketing and marketing communication messaging?
I think one of the things that came through, both from that discussion with Jake, which yes, if anybody hasn't listened to it, backtrack a few episodes and you'll hear it. I mean, it was incredible. It really was. And somebody who is, been in this area and this debate for so many years now, and he really has seen the trends, and he tells us about those trends and what we can do about it today. I think the big thing that I really took from that, is that really to get ahead of the game, really, and ahead of the consumer, if that is something that you are looking to do, is to kind of not do it at a generic level, is to select and choose an area of your business that you would describe as maybe what we would term in marketing speak a core competency. So something that you are really, really strong at. It could be maybe looking at your USP, your unique selling proposition, or your core competency, something you do better than the competition that's really hard to replicate. So those are really core things that give the value to your consumer or your customer. And if you can find something in there, just really in that sort of ingredient to the whole menu of communications that you do, then I think that could be a really great place to start, because one, you're already great at it. You're not just good at it, you're great at it. So there's got to be room for improvement there. It is also something that means you're probably just by definition ahead of the rest of the pack, in. So there's a good opportunity because you're probably best in class at it right now. So therefore, if you could find something that had an ethics or a real authenticity to it, or there was some kind of carbon footprint reduction, or there was something that just had a really strong sort of sense of sustainable value within it, then I think that's where you need to start and really kind of really unpick that. And I think it is at that kind of level of real detail. I think you've got to get granular. A lot of the time, as marketers, we're still just trying to get our head around this thing called sustainability. So we talk at a really high level. I think to really uncover where you can get ahead of the game, you've got to really look inwardly at the detail. I don't think you can do this at a high level of branding. I think this is down to your packaging. This is down to, the product value that you bring. It could be a process. It could be something you look at the supply chain, or what we might term the value chain. Could you just get something to market in a really efficient way that is super efficient and thereby reducing carbon footprint, thereby giving you, something you can talk about. So I think it can come from anywhere in your business, but I think it is about uncovering it, beginning with your core competencies, those USPs, because that is an area where hopefully you've got a lot of confidence before you start. And if you can unpick why that's a level of, uniqueness to your brand or your business, then you may be able to then very quickly uncover where you might just be able to sort of tune it by maybe just even 1%. And that might be enough to uncover a little improvement that you could start talking about. But I think leading on to that is that it's not necessarily that you're reporting the end game when you do that. It could be just the first step of a journey. So you might not have actually cracked it or nailed it, but you might have taken it to a point where you think, actually, we've improved it to a certain point that is the start of this longer term journey of improvement. But we're so proud of what we've just done. Even if it's just a 1% improvement, that could be enough to tell some stories. And I think therein lies probably this ongoing communication. It isn't probably just a one hit. It is probably getting your customer on board with their kind of interest and involvement in this longer term journey to sustainability. And, let's face it, we want to engage with brands who are, bringing us along with them on this journey. It isn't just oh, yeah, they've done it. It's kind of like, yeah, they're not perfect yet, but they're really trying hard and they're giving us evidence of why we'd want to come on the journey with them. So I think it's probably the mix of those two things can kind of really get us off the starting gate, really.
Yeah, that's really interesting because looking at processes and sort of behind the scenes things that you may be doing in your value chain or your supply chain could be quite interesting. And I'm always interested in sort of creative ways to connect brands with consumers. So that could be behind the scenes kind of stuff and starting that storytelling to take consumers on the journey. A couple of things I've been reading about recently as well is like storytelling. The power of storytelling over presenting just facts and making, blatant green claims seems to be the better way to communicate sort of sustainability efforts. Have you found sort of storytelling to be a decent tool in what you've been doing for your clients? And how do you think that helps brands get green messages to resonate with consumers?
I would say 100%. I think, unless you're the kind of person, of course, lots of people are like this, and I'm not decrying the facts and figures. I think almost to have the facts and figures as the foundation underneath, which you then on top of that embellish it, you tell the story, you bring people along with something that's a little more kind of engaging for the heart, not just the head. And I think it is this kind of mixture between head and heart that is going to be where the winners are found in this marketing sustainability. I think if you can find a fact and then do some deep dive, sort of interrogation of where did that kind of story come from? Where did that number originate? Why was it kind of so much lower before? And kind of let's tell that story and the little nuances and the context. That is what people want to kind of be hearing and engaging in. And I think I certainly see, as you say, about my clients and my experience, I certainly see when I tell the story in a kind of an interviewing sense, and actually get into a conversation much like this, where it is a conversation, that kind of let's answer some questions. Let's dive deeply into a particular kind of issue or challenge. And then you kind of explore, well, what's it like for you? Kind of how are you finding it? People really, really engage with that. If we just presented a simple infographic that said, to go from X to Y, you've got to do one steps, one, two, three, four, five, you're kind of left with that. Okay, yeah, but everybody could do that. And it's kind of, yeah, but where's the subtle kind of, yeah, but how is that going to feel? And kind of, is it how much pain is in there? Where are the challenges coming from? And really kind of get to the sort of the heart of it. I think that's what we're talking about here. So I would say it's only through storytelling we can ever get to that level. Otherwise, it is just an infographic. And the infographic can support the story and probably should, because otherwise it's just a lot of hot air and you might find that there's a bit of greenwashing going on. So you've always got to underpin it with fact. But I think it is the stories above the fact that are going to help us all to figure it out. Because let's face it, nobody on this planet, despite what you hear and read, nobody on this planet has figured this out yet. This is the first time any of us have ever been in this day here today in 2022 and going into 2023. Nobody's ever been here before. So we're all learning on this journey. And I think it is about the sharing and caring with facts and figures backed up with the stories and the detail behind it. I think that's where we're all going to really succeed and win. And let's face it, there's almost kind of a different way of doing marketing now. It's kind of, I was listening to, a couple of commentators on this, so one called Paul Skinner, who's going to be sort of on the podcast early in next year, and he talks a lot about kind of doing this in collaboration. So whereas marketers might have in the past kind of really seen everyone else as competitors, we're actually needing to see this as a big collaboration, because if we just compete head to head and encourage people to consume, this going back to this word consumers again, then what are we doing? We're just eating the planet. I'm paraphrasing what he says, but it's kind of that's the essence of it. And I think a lot of the time what we should be doing is collaborating, trying to figure out in a market sector with what were competitors in the past, what is the best way to actually, drive our sector forward. And yeah, commercially, we've still got to be making money, but it is, if we do this in collaboration and all share best practice where we can, we're going to be as a sector saving the planet, and then we'll all be in business for the future. Otherwise, we're all going to kill each other, and that really is how it's going to go. So I think, it kind of really does come full circle for lots of what might be, really competitive industries of the past. I think it's about rethinking our sectors in lots of ways and almost reinventing what marketing means. I know this is going quite deep now, but I think we're going to see this come through next year as part of the debate. I really do.
Yeah, it's interesting. Sort of my most recent history of working in the whiskey industry, and there does seem to be a lot of space or a lot of appetite for collaboration, certainly amongst the smaller distilleries, and working with, you know, companies like, or institutions like Visit Scotland, etc., to drive sustainable tourism. You know, one of the biggest fears that I had when I was a brand manager for a sort of small distillery, and I'm maybe working away doing brand building in, say, France or Japan or something, and getting pressure from other parts of the business to include messaging around sustainability efforts, I was always nervous about, you know, making those claims in fear of a response of accusations of greenwashing that you mentioned a second ago. Are there any sort of watch outs from your experience on how marketing communications can help to avoid accusations of greenwashing?
Yeah, I think this is a big fear, and I'm hearing this a lot. And this is from, you know, senior level, junior level communicators, digital marketers. You know, I'm just getting this from all angles, is that this is probably the biggest fear right now, is that I want to do this, I want to say this, I want to kind of be in the conversation, but I'm too scared to. One, because this actually takes us beyond our traditional brand guidelines, you know, those kind of that rule book of things that we shouldn't, you know, shouldn't say. But also at the same time, I could get shot down here. And if I get shot down personally because of something I've put out there, well, one, I'm probably going to lose my job. But two, what am I going to do for the brand? You know, we could really be on the back foot then for a long time. I think the key here, and this is very, very easy to say, obviously, at a generic level. And of course, you know, the devil is in the detail here. But I think at a really kind of higher level, the trick is that this is all about the journey. And I think it's not about actually saying that we are perfect. I think it is about really holding up that authenticity card and saying, look, the only way that we're going to really kind of get you on board as a customer here in the stories that we're telling, in the messages we're putting out, is to say we're not perfect. We're not claiming to be perfect. We're not really even suggesting that we've got this figured out. But what we'd like to do with you is to introduce you to our plan. And our plan isn't at a really high level. And I think most of the greenwashing stuff, to me, the examples I've seen have really come at the highest of levels, where it's kind of done at the kind of the corporate brand level. I think you can really play it safe as a marketer or as a communicator or as a PR specialist by going deep. And I think the things that you're talking about are going to be at a very kind of tactical level where you've got the examples to back it up. So, for example, I mean, I know there's been a lot of debate, particularly on all the social channels, sort of recently with the World Cup, Football World Cup in Qatar, with big brand kind of, you know, the global kind of sort of corporate footprint sort of brand claims of being, this is, you know, the greenest World Cup ever. And yet at a sustainable level, when you look and dive down deeply, actually it's probably the event that's got the biggest carbon footprint that has ever happened on this planet. You know, if you take the whole kind of supply chain and all of the, you know, creation of this World Cup over many, many years into account, it's probably the most carbon consuming event that's ever taken place on this planet. So that's really hard to kind of then sort of counteract that with non-greenwashing kind of statements at a global level. But if you drill down into some of the detail and say, well, actually, okay, how we've flown all the teams and all the supporters to this event, you know, there could be stories in there that aren't actually greenwashing, because there could be some really good practical examples of how that's done. How some of the stadiums have been, you know, created, and how they've, you know, sort of done this, you know, sort of you know, very, very fast track production of brand new stadia across the country. You know, a lot of that stuff probably can be justified as being, you know, very, very green. A lot of those things will have been done in a sustainable way. But when you take it holistically, you can really fall foul of this, because somebody somewhere will have a story that will say, ah, yeah, but in this particular area, you didn't. So that's what we're going to focus on. And then, of course, what is the first thing the media or social media commentators focus in on is that point of weakness. So my recommendation is to not fall foul of that big ticket greenwashing, which is like, as a big brand, you know, we're amazing. And, you know, again, coming back to your examples in the drinks industry, if you go in with a big claim about your packaging, for example, as being the greenest of green, or, you know, we've kind of reinvented packaging for the industry, somebody's going to find another example somewhere else, even in a micro business where they've done it better than you. And so then your claim is shot down. So I think it's about starting at a very kind of, you know, grassroots level, building the story up, building it up as a journey, not making big, bold claims at the outset, because they are always going to be found out. So I think start local, start, you know, really at ground zero, really, and tell the story from there. Don't start talking at the kind of, you know, the bigger brand level. And I think keep it simple and keep it small. I think, you know, lots of people are trying because they feel they have to make big, bold claims, when even the smallest of claims, little wins can be enough. This is a long journey. You know, this is not something that's going to die off next year. This is going to now be how we do business. You know, the marketing mix has changed. So I think, you know, just kind of reflect on that. You're in the long game. This is a marathon, not a sprint. So you can afford the luxury of time here to build this up organically from the bottom up. It isn't something you have to go in at the top level. So I think avoid the big brand claims and start where you've got local influence and control, really.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, the World Cup's obviously had a lot of negative press, but I've read some really interesting sort of, as you say, local initiatives. Because I was going to ask you, you know, fast fashion and single-use plastics have obviously got a lot of attention over the last few years in a lot of associated accusations of greenwashing. So I was going to ask, you know, how do some other industries, in my mind, like the alcoholic drinks industry, seem to get away with some... even though they're making obviously quite a substantial environmental impact, they don't seem to be saying a lot about that. So do you think, you know, making those smaller sort of local claims for a global beer brand, for example, that does have like a complex global value chain, could be transparent and realistic and take consumers on a sustainability journey, as opposed to making massive global claims about 2030 net zero things?
Yeah, it is complicated. It really is. And I think if I was able to give a simple single sentence answer to that question, I mean, honestly, I probably wouldn't be doing a podcast and wouldn't be sat here talking to you. But I think that the point is, I think here, that it is complicated. It is really, really complex. I think it is a really interesting challenge, I think, that we face here, that, you know, we can't sort of think of this as being simple. I mean, we talk about scope one, scope two, scope three initiatives. So scope one is the stuff that you're doing for your own business, your own brand. Scope two is the stuff that you consume as a business to do what you do. And then scope three is all the other businesses in your supply or value chain who kind of contribute to your kind of footprint, for example, your carbon footprint. And I think if we can just begin initially at scope one, just kind of get our ducks in a row, just get our house in order. And even if it is at a local level, and again, if you're operating internationally, it probably is going to be very different across each of the territories that you operate in. And I think to say, if you are a global brand, just to say, as a brand, we can achieve this and we do this, I think it's probably a step too far. And I think it will be that you will find probably best gains operating and then communicating at a local, maybe even regional level, and having very specific messages of the progress that you're doing in a particular territory. Coming back to Jake's example, Jake was responsible at Coca-Cola for European sustainability initiatives, but he wasn't looking at, say, North America, and he wasn't looking at the Far East. They were taking guidance and inspiration from other initiatives elsewhere. And maybe that is the point here. Maybe the point is that if you kind of really look locally, look and understand what are the impacts here that you can make at a local level. And then maybe if you do have a global brand, be then sharing those initiatives globally. So you maybe set up local teams, all of whom are then part of this kind of little new sustainability ecosystem. So you share, if you're responsible in UK or for Europe, you then share maybe with Americas, you know, you share kind of what they're doing over there and vice versa. So you can all constantly kind of learn, because then it's scalable. I think to imagine that you can do something from one central function that is going to be applicable across the world, it probably is a step too far, or it's going to take a lot longer than you'd imagine. So I think maybe local initiatives where there is this kind of sharing as part of maybe a global virtual team. So maybe you split your globe up into, I don't know, 5 or 6 regions, you know, the typical regions that we would normally market to, and maybe have local initiatives that can make some impact, and then see if that translates across others. So I think there's a lot of kind of collaboration at this kind of scope one, the internal house, in order first, before you can even start to think about the broader supply chain and value chain. Although, and the counter argument to that is, yeah, but what happens if one of your suppliers is doing great things? Well, obviously, then you'd want to kind of get them on board, because that might make you look good too. And you might then be able to say, well, if we can replicate what you do there, maybe we could do something like that internally too. So I'm not saying don't have those conversations. If you know there's suppliers, or maybe, you know, further downstream, you know, maybe there could be resellers, retailers, wholesalers, you know, so that end of the equation, who are also doing good stuff that you can learn from. So maybe start to broach those conversations, but I think it does really start in-house first. I think it would be somebody who's very brave or arguably foolish who would want to, you know, crack every single base, you know, in the first wave of activity. I think you do have to really kind of look inward first before you even start to have those conversations. But if you know there's good examples elsewhere that you can tap into, well, what's not to like, really?
Yeah, that's interesting. So look internally first, and really sort of drive those conversations around collaboration and potential partnerships in your supply chain. You mentioned something a couple of minutes ago, actually, about the marketing mix having to change moving forward. What do you mean by that?
Oh, I love that you've introduced that, because then it seamlessly doesn't embarrass me as I sort of want to give that little push into the Mindful Collective. So if anybody's brand new to this this podcast, you possibly won't be aware of something that I co-founded with a couple of others a few years ago, which is something called the Mindful Collective. It's a UK-based not-for-profit organization. You can find it at mindfulcollective.net. And what we've been doing is kind of trying to figure out over the last 4 years or so, we think we've kind of got somewhere near it now, thanks to the inputs of Archie and others in marketing. We've kind of decided to focus on marketing communications as being the way that the Mindful Collective can influence the world, hopefully, going forward. And what we've done is we've tried to reimagine the marketing mix. So the old marketing mix, which was product, place, price, promotion, and then extended out to include a whole bunch of other things that begin with P, up to a list of about 17, I think was the last one I managed to count, you know, ridiculous number of things. But it was very much for a consumer driven, and I really emphasize that word, consumer driven world. In other words, we as marketers were encouraging our customers to consume. In other words, buy more of this product and we'll make more money, you'll consume loads more and everybody will be happy. That now seems so outdated. To be consuming stuff from this fragile planet seems the most ugly, inappropriate and downright disgraceful, really, way that marketing can define itself. So what we've done is we've said, come on, guys, enough is enough. Let's collaborate and figure out a new way that we can, in a very wholesome way, keyword there, a very wholesome way, redefine what it is we try and do. And this is about bringing value to our customers and not view them as consumers. So they don't consume stuff, they get value from us and our brands, whatever we happen to provide value with. And it probably is products and services. So we've redefined the four core elements of the marketing mix as being product, people, process, and profit. And those are all things that can really contribute to a more wholesome society, a more balanced, sustainable world, and really focus in on where we can deliver to our highest purpose. In other words, the way that we add the most value and the most, you know, wholesome way to the world around us. So we give back to planet, we create the right kind of profit, we have the most effective and efficient processes and systems, we work with the right kind of people, so we're delivering value in collaboration, and our products and services are innovative, but they actually create value, not only for the people we're serving, but also for the communities and the world around us. It's almost like I've pitched a strap line there and a sort of a USP. But the nice thing is that being a not-for-profit is I can actually evangelize this, knowing it's not designed to make money. So it's a real collaborative thing. And I think the more we can get marketers on board with this new marketing mix and get away from using this word consumer. So now, one of the things that I'm challenging people to do is to think of B2C, which used to be the definition of business to consumer, and redefine it as business to citizen. In other words, we're all kind of global citizens. We're all interacting in this world that we're trying to protect. So B2C now, in this new mindful collective world, and the way we define the marketing mix, we're now serving in a B2C way. So business, our business or our brand, to citizens, not consumers. And of course, this implies then that we don't actually want to sell them too much. We sell them what they need, and we make, what was the phrase? We're making what we need attractive, not making attractive what we need. So actually what we're doing is we're not encouraging people to just buy more for the sake of it. We're trying to get people to buy more of the right thing. And actually, maybe this is where subscription models come in. So we serve people in an appropriate way so we can take back what they no longer need or are using, or if it's become obsolete, and then serve them with the new version of it. And by taking things back as products, then we can recycle it, or we can repurpose it, or reuse it. So it's a really kind of nice, feels like a good way of just doing business really going forward. So thank you for letting me have 5 minutes just to pitch that little offering there. But mindfulcollective.net, shameless plug for the website for it.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting to move that marketing mix forward. The 17 P's is getting a bit much, isn't it? But I guess the premise of all that is the value exchange with citizens then, and not consumers anymore. Do you see placing the brand at the center of that is the best approach to taking people on that journey and engaging or enhancing consumer brand relationships? Or does CSR and sort of public relations still play a role in there somewhere?
It probably does a little bit further downstream, but I think as long as the brand reflects the higher purpose of the organization. So what do I mean by that? Well, to me, the highest purpose is that kind of fundamental reason why on a Monday morning, we all get together with the people that are in our organization to add value. And so the highest purpose is kind of like, what is the fundamental reason why we get together? What is the most value that we can add to the people that we're serving? And as long as it's all focused around that value add, then I think our brands, which are driven by purpose, should be at the forefront of this. But I think for lots of us, it means we've got to probably rethink what our brands stand for. Because if our brand is kind of there talking about, you know, unadulterated luxury, for example, and, you know, we still see a lot of brands pushing, you know, consumption. We still see a lot of brands pushing, oh, yes, it's, you know, to use the old Stella Artois, for those of us who are old enough to remember Stella Artois' old branding from the like 1980s, I think it was, which was reassuringly expensive. In other words, you know, you pay a little bit more here and you're going to get even more value from this product. Well, of course it wasn't, but it was kind of, that was the positioning. And I think if you're sort of so far away from purpose at being at the core of your brand values, and much as that positioning would be, then I think there's a lot of work to do. I think the brands that have grown up and almost been created off the back of a higher purpose, in other words, a group of people have come together, they've figured out that they have a specific value they can add to the world. And then off the basis of that, they've created products and services. Well, they're going to be ahead of the game. You know, purpose-driven organizations, you know, all the likes of Patagonia, for example, who have kind of absolutely put planet at the center of everything that they do, you know, are going to go great guns. And I think there's no doubt about that. We're seeing lots of evidence that, you know, they are the ones getting commercial success right now. So we're all on that kind of spectrum of like really down the ugly end or right up at the attractive end. But I think, yeah, CSR, if it's done right, can come into it. PR, you know, brand communications, digital campaigns, all of those things have got a part to play in the channels of communicating what we're doing. But you've got to get that brand thing right first. So kind of really own up and be honest and authentic to yourself as to kind of where your brand is, and don't try and hide the fact that you could be way off the mark right now. And if, in which case, then it's a great journey to share. And I think it's about the honesty of kind of where we are now, but look, this is where we're trying to get to. And then if you can share that in public, that's the key. Really be honest and share it and be transparent. Then it's going to be a fun journey for sure.
Yeah, that's great. So I probably should have mentioned this in my introduction at the start. I'm currently studying a master's in international strategic marketing at University of Glasgow. All the coursework is done. I just need to write my thesis, which I'm going to focus in some way on sustainability marketing. So my final question for you is, if you were in my position and you were to write your master's thesis on sustainable marketing in 2023, what would your topic be and why? Or to maybe put it a bit differently, if you had a crystal ball and you could see into next year and beyond, what do you think the biggest sustainability marketing challenges that your clients will face will be in the future?
I think it's the same answer for me. And I think it comes down to a very simple word that might actually surprise you and might surprise others. The word is love. Okay, so, and I'll kind of explain and caveat why that's the word love. I think decisions typically are made either based around love or based around fear. So every decision we make in life and in business, I firmly believe, can be tracked back to, it's either made through love because we want to give generously or we want to add value, or it's made through fear. So it's a defensive mechanism for survival. I think that the organizations, the people, the brands who are going to succeed at this will be the ones who embrace love, empathy, kindness, and that's both to people, but also to planet. I think it's the ones who obsess about, actually, we need to just do this in a really kind way. We need to be really giving. We need to be just really honest. Let's get away from the fighting. Let's just be just great citizens of this planet and our sectors and our customers, and actually as a group of people coming together to be marketing or to be, you know, creating a product or service. I think that's the big difference, and I'd love to see if it could be in some way quantified, the brands and the companies who are on the love side of the equation and the brands and the companies who are still there looking to battle. So they're fighting, they're fearful, they are in defensive mode, they just don't believe this, they're in denial. And if we saw those on the other side of the equation, how they have performed then in maybe 12 to 24 months versus those who have embraced the kindness side, the empathy, the love. Because I think, and my prediction, just come back, that crystal ball idea, which is a really interesting one, and I'll put this on record now, is that I think we will see a huge disparity rather between those two. I think the gulf between those two at the moment is quite narrow because most people haven't really figured it out or even figured out which side of the equation they're on. But I think over the next 12 to 24 months, that will become really, really wide. And people will need to jump into one camp or the other. And my money is very, very firmly in one side of that as to which one's going to be the winners. Because I think citizens, used to call them consumers, but I think citizens will see the ones who are based around fear and fighting, they'll see them for who they are and what they are as brands. I think the ones that they will align with, because it's aspirational, it's motivational. And let's face it, who's not going to enjoy that side of the equation? I think they'll align on the side of love and empathy and kindness, because that ultimately, I think, is going to be where the winners are going to be hanging out.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because you mentioned people and planet there quite extensively. I'm thinking something that maybe went out of fashion is the triple bottom line sort of focus. Do you see that coming back into what you're doing with the new marketing mix?
I think it's always been there. I think it's really what we've tried to do. And I have kind of been aware of that for many years. And I haven't really tried to kind of, you know, go against it or add value to it. I think it is kind of one of the same thing, to be honest. I think what we've tried to do is kind of turn triple bottom line into almost like more marketing speak. We've kind of tried to translate it for marketers. And when we've realized actually what we're doing, which is that, then we've said, well, okay, we need to just call it the new marketing mix, because then it kind of, it really resonates hopefully more for marketers, because we do really genuinely believe that, you know, marketers can save the planet. There's a great podcast, by the way, if you're not aware of it, and anybody listening is, Can Marketing Save the Planet? It is a podcast. Run by two sort of great friends of mine, and go and sort of track that down, because it's well worth a listen if you're not already aware of it.
I have the sustainable marketing book here,
and there it is. There we go. It's all about sustainable marketing. So yeah, you're already there, Archie. Yeah, you've got it.
Well, great. I mean, that's the questions I had noted down. I think we could probably speak about this until Christmas or beyond. Mm. Any sort of final thoughts that you would close things with? You're certainly what you guys are doing at Mindful Marketing, etc.
Yeah, I think it is just, let's do more of what we've just done here. I think let's just do more talking. You know, I've never been one to say I've got any of the answers. I mean, I'm just hopefully a facilitator to keep people talking. And I think the more people who talk, the more people who challenge and ask those questions, even if we don't have the answers, at least if we're asking each other, you know, the right kinds of questions with, you know, with a heart, and it isn't just trying to catch people out. It is about let's try and learn from each other. I mean, that is what mindfulcollective.net is all about. You know, so there are lots of interviews on there. There's lots of examples. And, you know, as each and every one of us kind of spot really good examples that, you know, bring some practicality to this, because we could spend, as you say, Archie, you know, we could spend, you know, hours and hours debating this, but what we've actually got to do is start taking some action. We've got to start taking those next steps, whatever they are. And I think just constantly finding case studies and good examples of organizations who are doing this stuff and then sharing it through the likes of mindfulcollective.net, you know, it's just a great way of, you know, just sharing the good word. And, you know, if we all collaborate and do this together, you know, to me, that is the bottom line of this. You know, that's how we're going to make this this world a better place, and also really prove the value of marketing and probably position marketing where it always should have been, which is, you know, at the heart and the center of the strategic debate.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, no, great. I look forward to maybe contributing more in the new year and keeping these conversations going.
Great. No, it's, and I thank you so much, Archie. This has been a, you know, really, really interesting sort of conversation. And if anybody's got any sort of contribution they might want to make to your studies, how would they get in contact with you? I'm presuming by LinkedIn.
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. Just my name, Archie Mills. Or I can give you my email address, which is archie@seedandtonic.com. So it's seed as in S-E-E-D and tonic as in what you put in gin. seedandtonic.com.
Great stuff. And thank you so much for, you know, taking the time to come up with all those great questions. It's been really interesting for me, putting me on the spot for once, the other way round, but it's been really fun. So I really appreciate it.
It's been great. Thank you so much. And I wish you all the best for Christmas and New Year.
Likewise. Yeah, we'll catch up again in the new year.